Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, May 21st. Wow, May is flying by. Our first article is written by Sharon Barricklow for the Herald and Review from Shelbyville. It carries the headline, Shelbyville Creating New Business District. With a tax increment financing district and business district already in place, Shelbyville is moving ahead with plans for a new business district and is interested in learning more ways to use the revenue generated by the district's 1% sales tax. The council met with consultant Jean Norbert to discuss options for a new business district for Shelbyville's West Side Business District that includes County Market and Walmart. Shelbyville will expand a revenue generating plan to the city's west side after a unanimous vote by the city council Monday night to create a new business district. The business district is the second for Shelbyville, which receives about $15,000 a month from a 1% sales tax in the city's current designated district. Business district funds Pardon me. Business district funds can be used for civic improvements and as local matching funds for federal and state grants. Mayor Jeff Johnson said the money provides Shelbyville with the means to take advantage of development opportunities. If a grant becomes available for road work or something like that, there is usually a percentage of the amount of the total project the city must pay, Johnson said. Business district funds can be used to supply that match without using already budgeted funds. Tax increment financing is another way for municipalities to raise funds by putting increases in property taxes in so-called blighted areas into TIF funds, TIF, which are given in grants to building owners to improve their properties. Shelbyville said no to a request for a $17,500 grant for the Shelbyville School District earlier this month to help provide air conditioning at Main Street Elementary School. After discussing TIF guidelines with Norber, Councilmember Tom Schaefer said he would change his vote if the council would reconsider the grant. I've been doing a little bit more contemplation about this, Schaefer said. Our other two school buildings will have air conditioning, but if school has to be closed for heat at Main Street, they all have to close down. If they go over the allotted number of weather days, the school have to make up those days with extra salaries paid to staff, and that comes back on the taxpayers in our community. If we can prevent that, I think we should. Norber said TIF and business districts can help communities provide economic development funds to enhance the business climate if used correctly. He offered to provide a TIF 101 class for the council at a future study session. The TIF has real value if used properly, he said. We can look at what the law says and how you're allowed to use it. It would be a good idea, Johnson said. We have this tool, and we need to know how to best use it. Our next article comes from Decatur, written by Allison Petty, an H&R staff writer. Park District Reviewing Security Needs. The Decatur Park District is contemplating a comprehensive security strategy for its sprawling parks and facilities. Park Ranger Chief Doug Taylor presented progress toward that end to the Park Board at its regular meeting on Wednesday. Taylor has been working since August to assess the district's needs, collect feedback and input, and develop a multi-pronged approach to improving the security. Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said Taylor's presentation represents a draft and there is more work to do. We're trying to look at all the operations and what works best for us, Clevenger said. It's complicated to develop a plan that can work for facilities as diverse as neighborhood parks, Decatur Airport, Scoville Zoo, Fairview Park, and the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. It's quite an animal, Taylor told the board. Taylor said the district currently uses cameras in 6 locations, and some of the camera systems are more sophisticated than others. There are 26 sites with alarms. Other components to consider include cybersecurity, controlling access, and who has keys to some facilities and barriers and signage. Park rangers are in the process of receiving some updated equipment, Taylor said, including tasers and protective vests. Taylor said he did not yet have an estimate for what potential improvements could cost, but hoped to move forward in phases. Citing his long career in law enforcement, he said, "In today's world, there is a cost for not doing it." Our next article is written by Chris Luzvardi, who's also an H&R staff writer. This is from Decatur. Grow Decatur points forward to workforce and housing. Leaders of the Grow Decatur initiative see the community making progress toward the imperatives the group has identified. Yet, as a series of meetings were held this week to review its plans, they said more needs to be done while moving forward. Grow Decatur has been working for more than 3 years to improve the community. "We're not done," said Bruce Nims, a co-founder of the group. "We've accomplished a few things in our community. We're here to keep things rolling. We want to take some big steps." Decatur has a well-defined game plan for developing the Midwest Inland Port, enhancing its water supply, and establishing a community marketing and rebranding effort, said Larry Altenbaumer, another of the group's co-founders. "Those areas of focus are important in attracting businesses and jobs in the community," he said. He said the framework is in place for several other imperatives, including lakefront development, education, grow the middle, vibrant and active, and 20 to 40. "The opportunity exists for the lakefront to become more of a destination. The opportunity exists for the lakefront to become more of a destination, and many of those attending the meeting Wednesday at the Decatur Public Library voted to list lake recreation as a top priority for the group to address. Goals for the group include making Decatur a more vibrant and attractive place, particularly for those in the 20 to 40 age range. We want to address what is important to them," Altenbaumer said. "Education in Decatur is making positive strides," he said. "I've never been more excited about the state of education in Decatur than I am right now," Altenbaumer said. "The most work remains in addressing workforce development and housing in the city," Altenbaumer said. "A struggle continues to match the skills of job seekers with available positions," he added. In addition, Altenbaumer said, adding a desirable mix of housing is an ongoing challenge. "Each of the specific areas of focus will be addressed in more detail during a series of upcoming workshops," Nim said. "The workshops will be held June 10th to June 12th and June 15th to the 19th, with the topics that each session will cover to be announced," he said. Nim said information from the meetings this week, attended by a cross-section of community members, will be analyzed for discussion during the workshops in June. Similar meetings have been held in the past as the group was establishing its initial plans of action. "We're seeing a more pronounced can-do spirit this time around that will keep us moving forward in the way that is needed," Altenbaumer said. "At the same time, there is no question we still have more work to be done." Nim said the group continues to recognize the urgency toward making progress and encouraging changes within the community. Our next article is written by Ryan Voiles, an H&R staff writer. This from Decatur. Township continues to wrestle with general assistance. Another hearing for the Decatur Township budget led to more questions on how to fund the general assistance program. The board has less than a week to determine how it will approach the situation in the coming fiscal year. The Township Board of Trustees held a special meeting Wednesday night to further discuss the budget, which needs to be approved by June 30th. However, the budget must be displayed to the public for 30 days before the end of June, and trustees and residents have continued to question the amount of money set aside for general assistance, which aids those who do not qualify for other public assistance. Of the $633,883 budgeted for the department, $304,883 was set aside for administrative costs, specifically $241,000 for the salaries of the department's three employees. Board members raised concerns about how the money is spent, but also the need to work constructively with the three union employees who are represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees and under contract until next year. Trustee Amy Roof, a Democrat of Decatur, said the board should hold off on making any significant changes. "I don't think it's an emergent need that we need to do right now," she said. "It's something we need to keep an eye on, though, and we need to have a plan that by the end of our terms, we can get those wages down." Roof said there is a need for more discussion with the union on what direction to take the program. She noted that the reason for the salaries was because the employees have more than 100 combined years of experience in the office. "They're not short-term employees that are making a bunch of money," Roof said. "After so many years, you get to have a higher salary. They're good employees that have been through a lot." The state stopped funding the program in 2011, and the property tax levy has remained flat for several years, resulting in significantly less money for general assistance. Discussion among township officials and union members are expected to continue this week, Township Supervisor Shirley Stanley said. The board will hold another special meeting at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, May 26th. Our next article is written by Teresa Churchill, H&R senior writer from Decatur, with the headline, "Genetics, a Hot Topic in Alzheimer's Research." More than an hour into an educational session about Alzheimer's disease, the most common form of dementia, Shirley Moore finally asked the $64,000 question. The Decatur woman essentially wanted to know if there were any genetic factors that could predict who would get Alzheimer's disease and who would not. "That's another lecture," said Dr. Tom Alla, interim director of the Center for Alzheimer's Disease and Related Disorders and associate professor of neurology at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. But he did describe a genetically determined protein profile that some people possess that increases the risk of developing Alzheimer's and is therefore, quote, "a hot topic for research." He added that diabetes and age are other risk factors. "The most worrisome thing is that it has been pretty well accepted if you make it to age 85, your chances of having Alzheimer's are 50-50, no matter what your family history is," Alla said. He estimated that more than 500 Decatur residents are living with the disease. The exchange was part of a free session at St. Mary's Hospital on Wednesday evening that attracted about 24 people. Part of the meeting was devoted to the importance of advocating with legislators on behalf of the center, which may have to close for lack of state funding. When Shirley Osland of Decatur asked if eliminating gluten from the diet improved a person's outlook, Alla replied that researchers are not quite to that level yet and still need to prove that any dietary change can make a difference. When Mary Comerford of Forsyth asked if there is a connection between Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases, he said scientists don't really know because there are some patients who appear to have both and are said to have Lewy body dementia. Wednesday's event was sponsored by the Greater Illinois Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association and designed in part to recruit participants for a variety of studies seeking to determine how to prevent Alzheimer's, detect it earlier, and/or to find better treatments. "What else is there?" Alla asked. "Existing treatments do not stop or slow Alzheimer's, but there is hope in being involved in research." Our next article was written by Teresa Churchill, H&R senior writer, this from Decatur, and it carries the headline, CASA Playhouse Raffle Raises Record $34,000. Rainy days are good days to play inside. Since April 30th, however, children staying with their mothers at Dove Incorporated domestic violence shelter have had a super fun alternative in the form of a log cabin playhouse donated by one of the winners of the annual CASAs for CASA raffle. The three youngest daughters of Jim Walters, Dove's executive director, certainly had a heyday trying it out during a dedication ceremony Wednesday afternoon. Emerging from a quick tour, donor Ari Anderson declared the playhouse adorable, super fun, and worth the drive from her new home in Bloomington. Anderson, a former court-appointed special advocate in Macon County and volunteer and board member for Dove, said she bought 50 raffle tickets to support the special advocate program with the intention of giving the playhouse to Dove as she won. "I figure it had to be some place where there are children," she said. Laying eyes on the playhouse for the first time, Anderson was also taken with Hazel, Isley, and Violet Walters, ages 5, 3, and 2. "Look at them. They're so cute in there," she exclaimed. Terry Ducey, director of the domestic violence program, said she simply couldn't thank Anderson enough, not only for this gift, but also her longtime support. Pam Burkhart, executive director of the Special Advocates Program, said because about 80% of the children her volunteers represent are touched by domestic violence, the playhouse finding a home outside the shelter is a perfect fit. "I also like the idea it will never not get used," she said. She added that the 2015 Playhouse raffle raised about $34,000, a new record. The other playhouse, fashioned to look like a beach house, was won by Kevin Collins Brown, who lives on Lake Decatur, and said his four children with partner Marcus Brown play in it for hours on end. They are Christopher and Kayla Collins Brown, both 9, and Maxwell and Iris Collis Brown, ages 6 and 5. Collins Brown said he's been buying Playhouse raffle tickets ever since Kayla had a special advocate while she was their foster child. "The kids just think it's awesome," he said. "They call it their lake house." We turn now over to the Decatur Tribune and pick up some of Paul Osborne's City Beat column. This first portion carries the headline, "What Happened to the Decatur High School Columns That Stood Behind Commodore Stephen Decatur's Statue?" As I mentioned in last week's City Beat, former Decatur Mayor Terry Howley is wondering what happened to the Decatur High School columns that once stood behind the Commodore Stephen Decatur statue on the northeast corner of Franklin and William Streets. And he says, I shot the above before and after photos of the columns in 2010, so we don't get to see those. But they were removed after cracks made them dangerous to visitors. Since last week's column, Howley has been keeping me informed of what he has been finding out about the columns, and the salvaging of the original columns doesn't look promising. In an article written by Kenneth Lowe in the August 8th, excuse me, 2010 edition of the Herald and Review, City of Decatur's Public Works Director Rick Marley said that, quote, structural faults, end quote, caused one of the four concrete columns to crumble, exposing the skeletal steel interior. Marley told the H&R that the part of the structure that looked like a column was actually a mortar mix that is no longer manufactured. It's supposed to look like sandstone, but doesn't behave that way. Water got in and fractured it to the point where it no longer could stay together, he said. Apparently, the other three columns were found to have the same structural problem. Marley indicated that the capital stones that were on top of them are still sound, and although they could be used again, the columns had reached the end of their days. The city of Decatur removed them, and the area later became the site for the Decatur Public Schools Foundation's Memorial Bricks project. Howley indicated to me that if he can get the specs on the columns, he could get bids on new columns and see if the community would support raising funds to purchase them. He would then use the original capitals and get the city to install them at the monument site. There is still a lot of work to do if they are to be restored. Maybe no one cares about doing this, he said. In 2011, about 300 inscribed bricks were purchased by individual citizens to encircle the Stephen Decatur statue at Franklin and William Streets. Even though the old high school building, named after Commodore Stephen Decatur, has been gone for over 35 years, and the Decatur Civic Center stands where the school once stood, a lot of people, especially those who spent their high school years there, have a lot of rich memories of it and what it meant to them and the community. With the actual columns essentially gone, maybe a good alternative to remember the school's history would be to incorporate the capitals into some project near the site of the Civic Center. The next part of the column continues with the headline, Government Can't Be Trusted to Report on Itself. There's a guest editorial elsewhere on this website entitled Local Government Units Trying to Become Less Accountable, Less Transparent to Taxpayers. It is written by Dennis DeRosset, Executive Director of the Illinois Press Association, which represents more than 500 newspapers throughout Illinois, including the Decatur Tribune. DeRosset explains that in order to cut funds, some Illinois legislators are trying to remove legal notices from newspapers and let each government unit post their notices on government-operated websites. Whatever that has been tried, for the most part, less transparency has been the result, with some units of government forgetting to post some notices. This newspaper, the Herald and Review, along with about all newspapers in Illinois, not only print legal notices in our newspapers, but post those same notices online for free so that anyone has free access to them. Obviously, we charge to print the public notices in our newspapers, and it's been that way for 200 years. But such costs represent a very small percentage of any government unit's budget. Turning over the posting of public notices to some 7,000 government units in Illinois, with the bureaucratic tape and hiring involved, will give taxpayers less transparency and, in some cases, no transparency. I'll let Dennis DeRosset explain what is happening in his guest column, but the growing attempt to pass legislation so that government can post and police itself is a really bad idea and should be rejected by any member of the Illinois General Assembly if it comes to a vote. Government has an increasingly dismal record when it comes to self-reporting to taxpayers what it is doing. Another bit of the column carries the headline, Post Office Lights. One of our readers, John E. King, sent me the following email, quote, I was wondering if you could give me a hand in getting the beautiful Art Deco lights in front of the post office working. I am a lineman for Ameren and stopped in the post office and asked the man at the window why the lights were not working. He said he didn't have any idea about the lights. I told him that I would be willing to help in any way to get the lights working again. I gave him my name and phone number, and he said he would give it to the postmaster. It's been a few months now, and I haven't heard anything from them. With the work being done on Franklin Street, I thought it would be nice for these lights to be working. I know you have a passion for downtown Decatur as I do, but I have no contacts to be able to get this done. It may be something as simple as changing the bulbs and the lights, but I'm sure there is a lot of red tape being a U.S. government building. End quote. King makes a valid point. The illumination would certainly further improve what's already been done with the streetscape project, and I don't see where it would cost too much. Back to the Decatur Herald in review, an article by Dick Zacher, or Zacher, at Zaker, H&R, senior copy editor. Oh, those kids today. The U.S. Census Bureau did a survey earlier this year to describe a child's day. The summary of the results is at once surprising, discouraging, and encouraging. Surprising because it seems girls are participating in sports almost as much as the boys. Between the ages of 6 and 17, 40% of the boys are in one sport or another, while 30% of girls are. Girls take more lessons, 33% to 26%, and more are in clubs, 31% to 26%. Of course, if you look at it from the other point of view, there still is a participation gap. Is that from a lack of opportunity in some areas, or just more things competing for girls' time? The figures are surprising also in that 29 hours a week is the amount of time kids 3 and under spend in daycare under the supervision of a non-relative. For a 5-day week, that's almost 6 hours a day away from mom, dad, grandma, or grandpa. Seems like a lot, but this number cries out for some compassion to five or more years ago. Also, however you feel about mothers working outside the home, this figure to me brings home the fact that affordable, safe, convenient child care is essential for the family. Here's one statistic that's discouraging. A bare majority, only 56% of kids 6 and younger, ate breakfast with a parent every day in a typical week. Meals are one of the huge bonding times for a family, so you can see what's being missed in Decatur and all around the country. I feel a little better that 79% of these youngsters had their dinner each day with a parent. So what did I find hopeful in this snapshot of American kiddom? Just that our girls and boys between the ages of 3 and 5 were read to an average of 7 times in the past week. If you're not a parent, you need to know how important this is. You start out by increasing the vocabulary, you unleash their imaginations, you give them some balance from their diet of electronic screens. And while you're doing all that, you're close to them. You give them hugs. You nuzzle their hair. You make them laugh. You open up the opportunity for sharing and explaining so much about life. You've shown them how much they mean to you. If you can make that happen with your child, grandchild, niece, or nephew 7 times a week, I thank you. We're out of time. We'll take a quick break and then be back for the second half hour of news from the Decatur area.